Good evening, it's Dan, your friend in Little Saigon, Seattle, and it is almost 7 o'clock here in the Pacific Northwest. The sky, which was blue, is turning gray, or did turn gray. It was gray all day, actually. That silvery gray sky that Dane Wigington complains about. That synthetic-looking gray sky that seems to show up about, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours after the planes stop spraying. Yeah. It's pretty weird, and I'm sure it's normal, and everyone's going crazy. But yeah, here I am in Little Saigon, Seattle. And the subject of the podcast tonight is going to be a little bit weird. I may discuss these issues in the future. Hold on a second. I got to set something up. Okay, here we go.
But you left the bodies, didn't you? This son of a bitch, you left the bodies and you only moved the headstones! You only moved the headstones!
Okay. And I may edit that little clip a bit, so you may only hear the most important part. There's a lot of, I don't know, Sturm und Drang drama that you cannot see because it's audio. But that particular selection of audio is from that great film from 1983, produced by Steven Spielberg, directed by Tobe Hooper. If you've ever watched The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, that would be Tobe Hooper. And this film that we're discussing this evening is called Poltergeist. Now, I got to tell you, it is on all these important lists. You know, there are these great guilds and associations and societies of film history that have already put this film on their favorite list. So I'm not really telling you something you probably don't already know if you're a film buff. But arguably, the film Poltergeist is one of the scariest movies ever made. I can tell you, I saw it in the theater when I was a kid. I was 13. It's embarrassing. I mean, when you consider the terrible, heinous, nasty shit that kids are exposed to these days, I probably would get mocked, but I grew up when the coolest thing in the world was an Atari 2600 or having a VCR, and if you were really lucky, you had HBO. So that was a different day and age. But yeah, when I saw the movie Poltergeist, I couldn't sleep for a couple nights. I mean, it just freaked me out. And keep in mind, for much of my life, up until the last few years, I was basically an atheist or agnostic. I just didn't believe. So the fact that I got put into that state's a little bit weird. It's like when I was 13, if you'd asked me if I really believed in God, I would have said no. But then somehow watching this movie when I was 13 really freaked me out. It kind of did. Different day and age, different world. It probably tapped into some of my own subconscious dread about my relationship with my father. But anyways, the film Poltergeist, and excuse me, it wasn't 1983, it's 1982. And so I was either 11 or 12, so I need to correct that. But 1982, PG rated, which, you know, back in the day, PG meant it could be a little bit scary. So yeah, it was scary and it freaked me out. The general theme of this conversation about the movie Poltergeist is to deconstruct it culturally. I actually hadn't thought about this too deeply until recently, but a lot of these films tell you an allegory that may be on purpose, might not be on purpose. If you watch the film Poltergeist and you think about the housing collapse, for example, in 2008, in a lot of ways, the great financial crisis and the housing collapse was sort of like the film Poltergeist. I'll get to that at the end, but it's just something to keep in perspective. So what I'm going to do, I'm not going to call it deconstructing Poltergeist because I don't know if this would be really considered proper deconstruction. I don't even know if it'd be proper hermeneutics according to Hans-Jörg Gadamer, but let's just consider this a discussion and a investigation of certain meanings and themes within the film Poltergeist. And I'm drinking coffee right now, so if you're questioning me about that noise you're hearing, that's what's going on. Well, first, I want you to say that the film is set, and it opens up, it's actually set in kind of a Levittown type world. And Levittown, if you don't know, was one of the first sort of post-World War II Americana, American dream type planned suburban communities. So Levittown was in Levittown, New York, and I think it was in the late 40s, could have been 47, but it was just after World War II, and a lot of GIs had help from the government to buy homes. And so a man by the name of Levitt, I believe, developed some properties. I think it was in New Jersey. No, it was New York, I think, New York. But the point is, it was in New York, I think, Levittown, New York, but it could have been New Jersey, but I think it was New York. And anyways, he developed this land, and so he kind of created the template for what we would call suburbia. So the film Poltergeist is kind of ostensibly set in kind of a Levittown type setting. It's a very planned community. The houses kind of look alike. It's Orange County, California. It's beautiful and sunny, and all the children are happy, and all the adults are, content, and they all have jobs, and everything's great. It's actually one of these perfect communities. Now, of course, the year 1982 wasn't necessarily that kind to everybody economically, but I'm sure there were people in California back then who felt quite, blessed, and it was great. Anyways, so this is where the film is set. And the family, the last name is Freeling. Funny name. I think it's like Freeling makes me think of Earthling or Earthlings who still believe in freedom. Like the Freelings, they still exist, but they're going to be extinct. Anyways, the last name is the Freelings, and they're a family of five, two girls, one boy, man and wife. Father works as a kind of a, real estate agent, sales dude, and mom is basically a mother, which, hey, you don't see that a lot in movies these days, the moms actually being moms at home, which again, I'm not preaching, this isn't the point of this, but it's interesting that the mom is actually a stay-at-home mom. And who knows, maybe it's because she has a toddler. Carol Ann, the youngest, I see, she, the TV people, they're here. They're here. Wasn't that creepy when Carol Ann says, "They're here"? Yeah. Carol Ann's kind of a toddler. I think she's like three or four or something. I think she's two or three, but I think she's three. And so yeah, but the mother stays at home, and then there's a teenage daughter and a son that's kind of in between. I think he's probably around 10. I don't really know the ages. I don't really care that much. But he's the one that almost gets eaten by the tree. You want to talk about creepy scenes in horror movies? That it's creepy to think about an old tree next to your window breaking in through the window and grabbing you and then trying to eat you. That scene freaked me out as a kid. So yeah, I was a 12-year-old kid. I guess I was a wimp by today's standards. Like, you got freaked out by a tree eating somebody. We got movies like Saw and Saw 12 and Hostel. I know. We're basically falling faster, people. But yes, there was a day and age where a kid might get freaked out by seeing a child in a movie being eaten by a tree, and that was freaky. And I think the special effects were quite good in Poltergeist. I don't really know a lot about the person involved, but he has that kind of style you'll recognize, and it's definitely quite good when you consider that this is sort of pre CGI, pre heavily computerized editing. So I have to just do a hats off to the special effects people. It could have been Lucasfilm, I don't really know. Industrial Light and Magic, whatever. Don't know, don't care, don't want to talk about it. But yeah, just a basically one of those types of families that is almost like extinct. Like it's an extinct species. The father makes enough money that he can afford to have his family at home with a mom that works from home. It's sort of almost extinct. There's also another interesting thing. At one point in the movie, the youngest daughter, the one that gets sucked into the dimension, Carol Ann, they're here, the TV people, they're here. At one point, Carol Ann is holding on to one of those play phones. I don't remember. When I was a kid, kids would have these make-believe plastic phones as toys. And it makes me think about one of those trends in our society over the last 30 years, where the phone has become, I mean, it's become the most important thing a person holds on to, even more important than the people around than the people around them. So yeah, it was funny, you know, when I was growing up, kids would have plastic phones, but they would also have like plastic animals that they might have as like, you know, here's my imaginary friend dinosaur. But it's funny, she was getting ready to go to sleep holding onto her phone, and it made me think about what has happened culturally to the phone and people and their relationship to it. Probably a bit weird to think about that. Another interesting thing about the film is there are TVs everywhere in the house. It seems like every room has a television. I don't think Carol Ann's room has one. Maybe that's why the portal opens up. I mean, again, you get punished if you don't voluntarily allow the works of Ball into your home via a TV. Then yeah, you're going to get a portal. But no, I'm just kidding. But yeah, there's TVs everywhere. There's a little TV in the kitchen. It's kind of funny. You know, at one point, the daughter is hanging out in the kitchen, and this is just before the poltergeist does his little trick with the chairs, okay? But the daughter's just watching noise, because again, the movie starts, the daughter's watching noise. You know the TV channel back in the day when there's nothing, what we call snow? Well, she's just watching noise, because the channel turned off for the night. Remember the day and age where the channel would turn off. I mean, that kind of gets me back to that my podcast about the off button. But, you know, yeah, the off button is almost gone. And there was a day and age when networks would be off for several hours. There was nothing. You would get the final little music, you know, da-da-da, and the rocket's red glare, and now we're off for the morning night, and it's going to be snow. And so the daughter's watching the snow. And that's how the movie starts. Well, there's one point right before the chair scene where the daughter's watching the little TV in the kitchen and she's watching snow, and the mother, Diane, says, "You shouldn't watch that. That's bad for you." And she flips it to the war channel. Oh, and I'm not saying it was a war channel. It was an old World War II movie, you know, a movie about World War II. But again, it symbolized that kind of, it would be better for you to watch this violent movie about, you know, how we won World War II. You know, it was kind of funny, that little message. Like, you don't want to watch snow. Watch the people being blown up. I don't know. But, yeah. And the other thing interesting, too, is at one point in the poltergeist, kind of in the middle, when the scientist and her technicians are working with them to monitor the house, they observe a bunch of ghosts. And all these ghosts are wandering. And people are saying, they're out there and they're wandering and they can't find their way home. And it kind of made me think about homeless people. Like in a lot of ways, for many people, ghosts are people that they don't see, you know, or I should say homeless people are ghosts. Wow, that was funny. But no, homeless people are like ghosts to many people. Many people don't see them. They really don't. I swear to God, they walk down the street staring at their phone. They've got their earbuds in. So even if a homeless person starts randomly screaming, which they often do. And I think if I ended up homeless, I would probably randomly scream from time to time also. It just seems like the thing to do if you're homeless. It's probably the freest form of entertainment that might not get you thrown in jail, at least not immediately. But yeah, I'll walk down the street of Little Saigon, or I'll be on 12th Avenue or whatever. And every once in a while, some random homeless person, male or female, that's been both sexes. I've even saw a transvestite or a transgender person do this once. But they'll just start screaming at people. Anyways. But yeah, I think that when that one part of the movie where they're videotaping all of the ghosts and they're looking at the recording of all these lost spirits, and it kind of made me think about homeless people. Another thing, too, interesting to think about in the context of this film is the way that religion enters it. You know, it's funny because at one point the mother actually says, "God help me." Now, that's interesting. That's interesting to me. She actually says, "God help me." It's hard to believe. Not only will you almost never see a mom that doesn't work, which means your kids are almost always invariably being taken care of by somebody else in movies these days. That's rare. But another rare thing to see in a film these days is any reference really to God in some positive way. It's usually God referenced in some horrible way, or it's a movie about how cool Lucifer is. you know, or a TV show about how awesome it is to be a witch or a vampire or to be a demon, how cool it is to be a cannibal. These are all good topics. These are approved topics by the elite. But to actually have someone use the word God in a movie these days, or a TV show that's positive, to talk about Jesus where he's not some buffoon, like in that TV show Preacher, and I know it's based on a comic book, blah, blah, blah. The point is, in terms of popular culture, it's difficult to find a reference to God that is positive these days. It's easy to find a lot of other religions where you get a positive spin, like, hey, Muslims aren't so bad, and, you know, all Buddhists are peaceful, and Satan is your friend. That is a very common fucking message. God Squad message. And you'll get messages from the Pope, because he's, I don't know what he is, but I'm certain he's not a Christian. But no, what you won't get much of these days in your film or your TV shows are positive examples of Christian people. It's something to think about, you know, and it might not even be popular. That's the scariest topic. I know I'm going off on a tangent here, but that's one of the scariest topics of this. The scariest aspects of this whole question of this reality is, what if it's the case that if you actually showed God in a positive way, there just is no market? Like, what if that's how fallen America is, or maybe even the whole modern world? If you made a movie or a TV show where Jesus or God were set in a positive way, as positive examples, where Christians were positive people, you know, doing a good thing in the world, if you actually told that story, would there be an audience for it? Would people go to see that movie? That's an interesting question. You know, one of my favorite movies of all time, and I guess this is an appropriate tangent because we're talking about movies, but one of my favorite movies of all time in terms of positive impact. And keep in mind, when I saw this movie, I was 20 years old. It was playing on 45th Street. I forget the name of the theater, but it was one of these theaters on 45th in the U District that would play old films, like old films. And this was the year 1990, and they were playing the film Ben-Hur during the Christmas season. And I gotta say, I saw Ben-Hur on the big screen. Of course, it was not a new release in 1990. It was 30 years old. But it held up over time, folks, from my perspective. It's a great film. The cinematography, the everything about it, the costume, staging, all of the set direction is amazing in that film. The editing is amazing in that film. It's a great movie, and it has a very positive message. But it's hard to imagine seeing a film like that today do well. So yeah, it's a bit of a tangent, but I just wanted to go there. But no, at one point in the movie Poltergeist, getting back to our core topic, at one point, the mother, and this is right near the end, the mother is trying to save, you know, Robbie, the son, and Carol Ann, the youngest, from a giant monster that's coming out of the little frickin' hole, the frickin' portal in the closet that the little midget woman said she fixed, but I guess she was a frickin' cheat. You know, I don't know what to say about it. We're going to talk about her next. But anyways, the monster mouth in the closet is trying to swallow her kids, and it's sucking in the air, and they're kind of like almost flying. And so she says, God help me. And that's the phrase she used right before she saves her kids. That may sound trivial, folks, but like I said, I just don't see that these days in a lot of the quote unquote popular media. I think it's worth mentioning that the tech geeks, the African-American dude and the white guy, they kind of had this interest in the whole portal as a way to get out, to get in. It kind of reminds me of the strategies people go through, the process of, you know, bargaining with reality. Like, maybe there's some trick that we can discover that'll allow us a way through this bullshit. So I'm not saying you should write much into it, but they seem to represent quite well that kind of tech utopian fantasyville that allows people to believe that there's a gadget or a camera or a device or something, some device that will save us. But no, back to that issue of religion. another interesting thing. During the night, that middle of the movie part where they're observing the spirits, the scientist and Robbie are talking, and Robbie wants to know where people go when they die. And the professor starts talking about, you know, some people believe there's this light, and some people believe it's a good light, and if you go towards it, and you go to a higher plane, and blah, blah, blah. Very New Age religion. You know, I would not call that Christian, okay? And the whole emphasis on the light. It's funny, throughout the movie, and I would even include the frickin', the snow, the noise channel on the TV set, when it's tuned into nothing, but it's a flickering light. Throughout the entire movie, there's this emphasis on heading towards the light. And listen, folks, I'm not saying there isn't some bright light when you die. I have not died yet, so I do not know what death is like. It very well could be the case that there's this bright, shining light, and you get sucked into it, and that's how it works. I truly do not know. But I do think it's interesting that there's this emphasis on moving towards the light, because again, you know, Lucifer is, amongst other things, the angel of light. That's what the name means. So it's one of those things where it's like that New Agey kind of, you know, the spirits are just lost and we need to help them find their way home, blah, blah, blah. And it's also interesting that, you know, Stephen, who is the father, Stephen, who is the dad, he's also a real estate agent and a sales guy. At one point, he's having a conversation with his boss, you know, the crony real estate business guy, and his boss is congratulating him, but Stephen's clearly burnt out, really burnt out. And they're having this conversation about this new development. So you know the Freeling development is in Cuesta Verde, and that means Green Slope, which I think is funny too. Green Slope. They live in Green Slope. Anyways, they're thinking about doing another development, and you know they're basically going to remove. They're basically buying a cemetery, and they're going to move all the bodies. And he's explaining this to Stephen, and Stephen's kind of in this weird, haggard, stressed out state from having a poltergeist, and his daughter is in a dimension, so he's trying to concentrate. And so he's listening to his boss, and, you know, basically it's like, you know, who would complain? I think that's one of the phrase that Stephen uses, who would complain? And then his boss says, well, no one's complained until now. And it's funny because that's kind of interesting too. Like, who would complain? Who would complain about moving a cemetery so you can build houses there? Who would get upset about that? That's telling also. It kind of tells you the state of America in that sort of final stage of suburban fantasy existence. Who would complain about this? And then consider, and then think about this for a moment. We are now living in America, where in one of the states of our union, it may soon be legal. And again, I'm an anarchist, so when I use the word legal, I'm talking about color of law that gives people the mistaken belief that what they're doing is right. But anyways, we may soon be living in a nation where it will be legal in at least one state to kill a baby after it is born, the state of Virginia. That might have already happened. It might have already happened in every state. It may be the case now that they are aborting children after birth. And if that's the case, I don't know how we judge the moving of a cemetery, especially if you move the bodies. But the point is, back in 1982, it seemed horrible that a real estate dude would, you know, build a housing complex on a cemetery, even if he moved the bodies. Of course, what we find out is, what we find out at the end, and this is that famous phrase. In fact, you know, that's the phrase you hear, the one at the beginning I have in the recording. But, you know, you moved the cemetery, but you left the bodies, didn't you? Didn't you? You left the bodies. Why? What? Yeah, exactly. But that was horrifying in 1982. In 1982, who would complain? That was horrifying. It was horrifying to me as a kid that some dude would be so fucking evil that he would build houses on a cemetery with the bodies still there. And of course, that's the penultimate ending of the whole thing. You know, the whole movie ends with, you know, Diane saving her kids. They get into the car. The car helps them escape. You know, that's another interesting message. The car helping you escape. It has a lot of interesting implications. But they get into the car, and the evil real estate developers left there, you know, to gormlessly stare at the house as it basically implodes on itself. It implodes into nothing and then disappears into a tiny speck and goes away. But before this happens, there's lots of mayhem on that street. Looks like a couple gas lines blow up. And tons of dead bodies, some of them in caskets, some of them not in caskets, coming to the surface. It's kind of funny. I mean, the Freelings are in their car. They escape. You know, at the end of the movie, the Freelings, when they get to the hotel, they put the TV outside. That's another interesting thing. There's, you know, there is a movement, I think, in America for all sorts of reasons, not least of which economic, towards simplifying your life. I know a lot of people are becoming more like me. They're wanting to use technology and to not be used by technology. So I run Linux at home. Why do I run Linux? Because I can't afford not to. And I also love Linux. I love the Unix operating system. But I run Linux, Ubuntu Linux, also in part because I don't have any money. So it allows me to participate in technology without spending hundreds of dollars every single year. It also allows my computer to last longer. I just got to be honest. Running Linux, all my computers are functional for years and years and years. In fact, I can bring an old computer back to life, so to speak, by just putting a good operating system on it, like Linux. Anyways, sorry for that little rant about Linux, but yeah, at the very end, when the Freelings are at the hotel, the Holiday Inn, they put their TV outside. They unplug from it. And I think there is a movement in this country towards that. But it is important. I want to emphasize this before I close out this podcast. I want to emphasize how there's an allegory here in the Poltergeist about this fetish around shelter, this kind of housing investment scam society that America became, has become, and will be as long as it lasts. You know, this society of house flippers who, you know, beggar thy neighbor. Essentially, we are beggaring thy neighbor in almost every case in this particular scheme. And listen, I know there are people in my family, friends of mine, who do this because they have to. I'm not judging that. You know, I made this point the other day. And well, let's just get this on the road. I have never in any podcast ever said to people, you should be more like me. I'm just going to get this out of the fucking way, because if you think that I'm speaking to you as some kind of fucking guru, listen, if there's a guru of failure and mishap and catastrophe, then I suppose I'm a guru of those things. But I've never claimed to be some great wise man. I just don't want to get that out of the way. So if you're out there and you participate in the housing scams and the housing loan system and the home equity loans and all the other bullshit because you're trying to protect your family, you're trying to keep them alive, I cannot possibly judge you, because I've had to do the same things. When it comes to the magical crocodile that runs this world, you often have to toss meat at it. Now, of course, when I say magical crocodile, I mean government. I mean the state. But you often have to grab chunks of red meat out of your satchel and proverbially throw the red meat at the crocodile, whether you like it or not. The crocodile swallowed my tax refund. You know why the crocodile did this? Because I haven't been able to pay my student loan payments. So, you know, tax topic 203, you know, treasury offset, transaction. You know, the federal student loan people get paid and Dan gets nothing. And guess what? I'm not going to talk about whether that's right or wrong. That's a whole nother topic. But the bottom line is, sometimes the crocodile is simply going to get its red meat. So I'm not going to judge you. If you have to participate in this broken economic system to survive because you're a parent, well, obviously, you've got to do what you have to do to protect your children. Being a parent, you have to protect your family. So I cannot judge in that sense. But I do think the movie Poltergeist is kind of a general allegory of the whole housing market, real estate, economy scam. And it very much starts out, you know, Green Slope. Green Slope is funny. Cuesta Verde, Green Slope. You know, and I think that's what it means. I'm going to double check here really quick. So I just went to Google Translate to disambiguate what Cuesta Verde means in Spanish. The first translation I got yesterday was Green Slope. But what's funny is the word Cuesta gets translated as cost also, you know, as in the cost of some product or the cost of your home. So, you know, green cost. I don't know. I think it's funny. I think the Cuesta Verde name is funny. But this is very much an allegory. The movie Poltergeist is kind of a weird allegory about the housing scam market. It starts out in this beautiful, planned Levittown community of Cuesta Verde in Orange County, California. It has a very cool family. The dad is cool. The mom's cool. Hell, they smoke weed, dude. They're cool. And listen, I vape weed, so I'm not judging. But the point is, they seem like a really cool family. Their kids seem really cool. You know, the dad works hard, and the mom's a good mom. But she's kind of a modern mom, too. So it's all pretty awesome. And then what happens? The little kid, you know, starts interacting with these channels that are basically noise. And again, that in and of itself doesn't necessarily mean anything. But it is kind of like all of a sudden there are cracks. There are cracks in the foundation of their lives. And it really is related to the whole notion of what a house is, what a home is. But yeah, essentially, throughout the movie, this home is kind of becoming this kind of no longer a place of safety, but actually a foreboding place. The home that starts out as this beautiful, sunny place of safety in sunny California becomes this foreboding, dark, evil place, menacing. And at the very end of the movie, what are you left with? It's kind of funny, but you're left with a couple things. You have a family living out of a car. Listen, in 2008, 2009, 2007, when the housing market was falling apart, lots of people, lots of families ended up living out of their cars. So it's kind of, I'm not saying funny in a way of saying it's so cool that people are homeless. That's not it. It's funny as in queer or interesting. And when I use the word queer, I'm not talking about homosexuality. I mean the way queer, you know, means strange. I just can't believe we have to think about this. You know, I'm never going to go to Canada again, because they're so fucking stupid. You can't say he or she, man or woman, fuck you. Anyways, yeah, so this family is basically living out of their car at the very end of the movie. The house implodes. Listen, at the very end of the movie, as I need to emphasize this before I close out, the evil crony real estate dude who built a community on top of a bunch of dead bodies, okay? He's watching that house basically implode into a tiny little nothing and then just pop out of existence. Boy, doesn't that match all of the stuff that happened in terms of the financialization of the housing market, the housing bond market, you know, the collateralized debt obligations, the mortgage-backed securities, all of them vaporized into nothing. And also, it's interesting the symbolism of the cemetery. Listen, when you think about what the Levitt town was, what the suburban community was, here's what you have to consider. Yeah, you can say and come back, Dan, we had this economic miracle going from the end of World War II up until around 1970. And it was amazing. And we just need to make America great again, just like it was then. Let me let you all in on a little fucking secret, if you don't already know this. Most of the advanced world was destroyed by World War II, except for the United States. But, you know, Tokyo, China, fucking Europe, France, Great Britain, Germany, Russia, to a great extent, these societies were burnt down to a nub by World War II. And then at the end, and then basically when the war ended, we had the Cold War. So we weren't really trading with the Soviets in any significant way or any of the communists, blah, blah, blah. So we had a period of time, you know, 15, 20 years, where we could print money, give the money to people in Great Britain and in Germany, West Germany, that is, and in Europe all over the place. And we called it the Marshall Plan. And we sold products and we had lots of spare capacity and blah, blah, blah. Yes, it was a great time, but that time was built on a lot of dead bodies. You know, that's part of the message of this whole, the American dream thing. And then when you think about the Native American aspect of things, there's a lot of the whole California dreaming that's built on a lot of dead Native Americans and dead Mexicans. I'm not trying to be a dick, but that's true. So whether you're talking about dead Mexicans or dead Native Americans, there's a lot of dead bodies that this American dream is built on. A lot of death, you know? I'm not trying to be an asshole, but that's basically true. You know, in a previous podcast, I was talking about the Oregon Trail. And listen, if you wanted to find the Oregon Trail as a modern-day archaeologist, you would probably just use some of these deep underground mapping systems. Find the initial spot where you find a lot of human bones. And my guess is you could map the real Oregon Trail just by looking for dead bodies. That's, I'm just being honest, people. Let's get real. So yeah, the movie Poltergeist is interesting. I'm not expecting you to see it the way I did, just describe it. But it is funny that that whole beautiful community was built on a pile of blood and death. And that is part of this thing, you know, this whole American dream that we're sold is a lot of bullshit. Now, guys, if you think the American dream is to live in a free society, I don't think that is bullshit. I think America should be about liberty. I was told when I was a kid that this country was supposed to be about freedom. It's not like, you know, remember after 9/11 when, you know, what's her name? Laura Bush came out and said, let's all go shopping for freedom. What the fuck does shopping or buying shit have to do with liberty? I'm not saying it's not cool to buy shit, but one thing has nothing to do with the other. Ask any slave in China, okay? Being able to go buy shit is not really as much a freedom as a feature of human existence. You know, having commerce and free commerce, you more or less need to have it if you don't want your society to implode. But would I call that a free society? No. That's not liberty. So yeah, if your idea of the American dream is liberty, then yeah, you and I are compatriots. Even if you're not an anarchist like myself, you might be a libertarian, we're friends. But if you think the American dream is the right to basically steal a lot of other people's property throughout the world and bomb their countries and build up a massive war debt, both financially and spiritually, and to build your beautiful Levittown villages on top of a pile of dead bodies, and then be fucking shocked, shock, shock, shocked, like that, you know, French police officer in Casablanca. He's so shocked to see gambling at Rick's. He, you know, then you're so fucking shocked that your beautiful existence is built on a mountain of death. Suddenly, you have death leaking in from the bottom and from the sides. And then at the end, your house implodes and that entire beautiful American dream just disappears into a tiny little dot of nothing. Anyways, this is my deconstruction of Poltergeist. I hope you enjoyed it. I think it's a great film overall. As horror films go, I mean, I've got a few favorites. Definitely Poltergeist. John Carpenter's version of The Thing, which I think also came out in 82 or 83. But The Thing by John Carpenter, it's awesome. It's nothing against the original Thing. I think the original Howard Hawks, The Thing from the 1950s, I believe, a great film. John Carpenter's film was very different. He based it upon At the Mountains of Madness by H.P. Lovecraft. So there's actually a little bit of the Lovecraftian in it, if you notice it. I believe the monster in John Carpenter's The Thing could be called a Shoggoth. But needless to say, not to get all Lovecraftian there, Poltergeist, The Thing, I think the original film Omen, very fucking scary. As a Christian, I'm wary to watch it because there's a lot about Revelations that I'm still meditating on. Don't want to talk about that right now. I would say the original movie Alien, I would put Aliens, the 1986 film, more into an action film because it wasn't as much scary as it was a kind of an action film, a traditional good versus evil flick. And very violent, of course, in that genre. But yeah, Aliens is also one of the great films. But I would say the original Alien from 1979. Also one of the great horror films. But anyways, I'm not going to list them all out. Poltergeist is awesome. Very scary. Definitely has the scary clown scene. So if you hate clowns and you think clowns are scary, there's a scary clown scene. Let's be blunt. Anytime dolls, all dolls can be creepy. All dolls have this kind of weird, almost esoteric, maybe even a cult aspect to them, where you feel like they could be entranced or a kind of a curse could be put upon them. I mean, again, I'm a Christian, so I don't really believe in a lot of the witchcraft hullabaloo, but you have this idea that some dark curse or, you know, magic could be put on a doll, and then all of a sudden the doll has red glowing eyes. So all dolls, not just clown dolls, but all dolls are creepy. And all dogs go to heaven, right? I don't know about Cujo. I don't know if Cujo gets to go to heaven. That's a whole nother topic. Anyways, I hope you guys have a great evening. And if you want to watch the movie Poltergeist, that's the original because I haven't seen the new one. Don't want to. But if you want to see the original movie Poltergeist from 1982, I highly recommend it. And then think about the housing market as it implodes, as their home implodes at the end. Think about the housing market, man. Think about the blood and the death.